Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everybody. Merry Christmas this week. If you're celebrating Christmas, Happy New Year to everyone a little bit in advance. In the tax cut compromise between President Obama and the Republicans, one of the biggest things that the president got was a 13-month extension of unemployment insurance for the long-term unemployed. This means some Americans, for the first time, maybe since the Great Depression, will be receiving unemployment checks for 3 years. Some Republicans denounce that as encouraging unemployment, subsidizing unemployment so that we get more of it. For example, New Jersey Assembly Minority Leader Alex de Croce of Morris County, as quoted in the press of Atlantic City today, said, quote, "The benefits are too good for these people. Why go to work if you can go for 26 weeks collecting $550 a week and you get an extension for another 26, that's close to $27,000 a year or $30,000 a year. And a lot of people figure, why go to work?" Unquote, from New Jersey Assembly Minority Leader Alex de Croce. Now, that'll certainly rankle many of you who've been out of work for a long time and just dying to get back in. You might have other effects that you're worried about of long-term unemployment, like depression and alienation and more trouble finding a job. So let's open the phones for any listeners who've been on unemployment long term now, let's say more than a year or a year and a half, what is life on unemployment like for you as it goes on and on? And what do you think this unemployment extension will mean to you if you're still on unemployment for a third year? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or post to our webpage, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. What is life on unemployment like for you long term? And what do you think this unemployment extension will mean to you if you remain on unemployment for 3 years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And as your calls are coming in, we welcome behavioral economist Dan Ariely of Duke University, author of The Upside of Irrationality. Hi, Professor Ariely. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, pleasure to be back.
What was your reaction to hearing the third-year extension of unemployment insurance passage from a behavioral economist's point of view?
So I was quite delighted with the news, and while I do understand that there's going to be some abuses, I think that the general view of labor is really kind of off in many people's minds. So, you know, why do we work? There's a very simple notion that we work to work to get money, and if people gave us money for free, we would stop working. It turns out that's not correct. Even mice, if you give them a chance to get food for free, or you give them a chance to work for their food, they prefer to work for food. And of course, the same thing happens to people. People get lots of pride and meaning and connection from labor. And the idea that if we just pay them, if we paid people millions of dollars, we might convince them to stay at home. But for these amounts of money, the idea that will overwhelm people's desire to work and be contributing members of society, I think is kind of missing the point of what labor really gives to people.
So people would certainly change what they do, right? If you're a bus driver and you win the lottery, you're probably not going to stay on your route for very long.
So actually, even in those cases, it turns out some people stay. But we're not talking about these amounts of money that are life-changing. We're really talking about a minimum income that is just keeping people, functioning. But we're not talking about wealth generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can wonder, imagine you could get the same amount of money from working versus from not working. Now, what kind of social pressure would you be under? What would you feel that you're giving less to your kids and your spouse? And what will you tell your friends who are around you when they ask you what do you do or how the work day was? You know, I'm a university professor. The truth is I have tenure. In principle, I could stop doing any work. They can't fire me. But nevertheless, I come to work every day. I was here last night until a little bit after midnight. Work is not just a simple translation of we hate it and we're only doing it for money. And the moment people would pay us, we would stop. That's one thing. The second thing is that people don't understand is how devastating it is for people to lose their jobs. There's something called adaptation. People get used to lots of bad things that happen to us. You know, I wrote about it because I had a terrible injury many years ago, and I wrote about how I started getting used to this life with a terrible injury. And you never get completely over it, but you get over it to some extent. It turns out that some things we get better over and some things we get worse over, and losing a job is something that people don't get over very well. You go to work, you invest into something, and if you all of a sudden lose your job because of something you don't understand what is happening, it really shakes people's beliefs to the core. And it's very hard to get over it and very hard to restart and get something going. And I think from that perspective, giving people a longer blanket to try and kind of figure out what's the next move is very important.
Let's hear from some of our listeners. As you would probably guess, Professor Ariely, our lines filled up immediately when we put out this invitation, because we know, especially at this time of day, folks, we know you're out there if you've been out of work for some time and have time on your hands in the middle of the business day. We know a lot of you are listening to this show, so that's one of the reasons that we keep talking about unemployment. So this time it's about life on unemployment long term. If you've been a year, year and a half, 2 years on unemployment, and now the Congress has passed this extension, which for some people will mean up to 3 years of unemployment insurance benefits if you need them. And Dana in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Dana.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I've actually been on unemployment now for, it's been exactly 2 years, since December of 2008. And although the unemployment benefits help, of course, when you have a family to feed, you have bills to pay, a mortgage, et cetera, you know, you rely on that money coming in. It's absolutely a big help. So, you know, for those of us who need it, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. However, being on unemployment for 2 years and going through the job search and having to make that phone call and or go online and claim those benefits every week after week after week is somewhat disheartening. It's actually very disheartening because you feel like you're doing all you can to try and be a productive member of society, so to speak, and you just are not successful. And it's very disheartening to be living this way.
What do you do every week? How do you fill the time? Do you have a routine? Do you have a challenge with boredom?
I still do sort of have a challenge with boredom. I do have a young child at home, so that is, she does take up some of my time, but she, you know, is quite independent. She's 3 years old. In terms of dealing with the downtime, it's a lot of job hunting, and you know it helps that I have time actually during the day to, you know, do laundry and run errands and go to the grocery store and things like that. Things that I would normally do after my work day or on the weekends or something like that. But for the most part, it's really job hunting. It's just searching online, going, you know, making connections, making phone calls, and it's a little bit of a brutal process, really.
Dana, thanks.
If I may add to this.
Dan, please.
One of the problems with job hunting is that it's a process in which you try very frequently and get lots of rejections.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And if you think about it, it's a very disheartening process. You try, you get nothing back. You try, you get nothing back. And because of that, over time, people find it more and more difficult to even send the application in and search because the odds are so low. And it's just kind of an experience in continuous failure. And one of the things we find out that works is to create a rule for yourself. So if you think about it, how many job applications are you going to send every day? It's so disheartening. You might say, oh, I'll just send fewer, or I'll do it tomorrow, and so on. It turns out if you have a rule that says you're going to send 10 job applications a day and you're not going to stop or do anything else until you find out 10 possible positions and send 10 resumes, that really helps people kind of stay in the path and in the pace of actually keep on applying, because otherwise it's just way, way too disheartening.
Well, I think also some of the problem is when you use things like maybe a job hunting website or like monster.com, for example, you come up with, you search your area, you search a certain job field, and you're coming up with the same job opportunities in every search you do. And there's only so many times that you can really apply to the same job. So, you know, after you've sent your application in once, maybe twice, it's sort of a futile effort to even go on this particular website when you know that it's not, there are no jobs being posted.
Right.
That's the other problem.
You have to keep finding new sources of postings and things like that. Dana, if you've been on unemployment since December 2008, then you're about hitting that limit, right? That 99-week limit, aren't you?
Yes. I think actually my 99 weeks are at the second week of January would be 99 weeks, I think.
And then are you done, or does this unemployment extension enable you to get more?
You know, actually, I'm not 100% sure because I didn't know that the extension was passed until I just heard you talking
right,
about it
right.
earlier.
Because I think the 99-week limit still applies. We should really get this clarified further than I have it. What I think, though, is that the 99-week limit still applies for people who have not reached that yet. Their unemployment was going to run out under the old law, and that's what the extension is for. So
right,
I think
right.
it's still a maximum of 99 weeks. So good luck out there.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you.
And we appreciate you sharing your experiences and your feelings with us eloquently today. Patrick on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
What's this?
Hold on. Got it. Let me take it.
Oh, okay.
See ya. I've been on unemployment since December of 2007, and I would gladly give back that money I got on unemployment to have a job because it's, like the previous caller said, it's really disheartening to be on unemployment, and, you know, you're not contributing to anything.
So what do you do to compensate for that feeling?
You know, I try to stay positive. My friends and family try to keep me positive, but sometimes it's really hard because, you know, you go to school, you get your degrees. I went back, I got my master's, you know, came out thinking, okay, I'd be in a better position, and still I'm hearing, you know, you're not a right fit for the position, you may be overqualified. You sort of wonder, what do I do with my life now?
So, Dan Ariely, I'm sure a lot of people are in Patrick's position, and it's one thing for them to get career advice, but it's another thing to, you know, to deal with these feelings.
Yeah, so there's a very important phenomenon called learned helplessness. And this goes back to old experiments they did with dogs. And imagine the following. Imagine two dogs, one in each cage. And the first dog hears a bell, then they get a shock, and then they can turn the shock off. They have a little switch in the cage. So there's bell, shock, switch to turn it off, and the dog does it for a while. The second dog gets the same shocks as the first dog, but they don't know why they're coming, and they can't turn them off. So they both experience the same thing, but the first dog knows what's coming, knows when it's going away, and the second dog just has no idea. And it turns out that if you then take these two dogs and put them in another task, the first dog is perfectly fine. They learn the environment, they're inquisitive, they figure things out. The second dog just kind of gives up basically on life. They become incredibly depressed. They lay there whimpering. And if they get electrical shocks and so on, they don't even try to escape. They just basically become depressed. And the key there is that when we don't understand the relationship between cause and effect, between what's causing us to behave a certain way and the outcome, we get quite depressed. And if you think about it, that's basically what happened to people who lose their job. You go, you become an expert in something, you are well trained, you're doing your job, and somehow, unbeknownst to you, there's a shock. You're being fired. You don't exactly understand what happened. You haven't done anything differently. All of a sudden, you've just followed the rules that people told you. You know, get a BA, get a master, do this particular action. And all of a sudden, it doesn't work. And it's this loss of understanding between what we're doing and what happens to us that I think is so difficult and so demoralizing. Now, I wish there was a simple solution for it. I think there isn't, because it really is kind of a very unpredictable, unexpected, understandable sequence of events. I do think, though, that we do need to do some activities, and people on unemployment should try to find. I mean, of course, they should try and find jobs, even though it's incredibly hard. But at the same time, should try and find opportunities to volunteer or opportunities in other areas, meet people, expand their social circle, and also kind of find some kind of social activity that they're going to be engaged in.
Patrick, you doing any of that?
I've just started looking into volunteering, actually, so I could get myself out of the house, because it's not easy staying at home, especially now when you can't really go outside and take a walk in the cold. So I'm just looking for more opportunities where I can volunteer. And one friend actually, you know, recommended I volunteer, and maybe that will turn into like even a part-time position, which, you know, I would take.
Patrick, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call.
And by the way, to be very clear on what the compromise offers and doesn't offers, it does not offer more unemployment insurance to the so-called 99ers, the people who are hitting the 99-week limit, which is the upper limit in the states with the highest unemployment. In New York and New Jersey, for example, the limits are different. I believe New Jersey is a 99er state, so you can be on unemployment insurance if you qualify up to 99 weeks. New York is a 93-week state because the unemployment rate is a little bit lower. Connecticut is also a 99-week state. And then it goes down gradually. Montana is 73 weeks. Nebraska is 60 weeks is the upper limit, et cetera. But in our area, looks like New Jersey and Connecticut, 99 weeks. New York, 93 weeks. And beyond that, the tax cut unemployment compromise does not extend you. George in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hello, George.
Hello there. I would like to give my analogy to how it feels to be unemployed. I was listening to your guests, and it was very good. It was similar to what I had in mind. But I like to look at it like this, that you're swimming, and all of a sudden you're in the water, and you're getting tired, and somebody throws you a life raft, and you say, boy, relief. And you start to floating. And after a while, you get tired of that. You say, let me help myself. I wish I could swim. So you start to swim, and you pull a life raft off because you want to get to someplace quicker. But then if you can't get it, you're glad that you got the life raft. So I want to thank the American public for footing the bill and for President Barack Hussein Obama for signing the extension, because without those two, we would drown. And even if you have a life raft, because if a storm comes along, the life raft won't help you. So it's always good to be independent and to have your own and to hold your head up. And then since I haven't been working, I said, let me utilize this time to some value. And I began to do some writing. And I want to write and give praise to my father, who I liken after Jesus Christ, second in line. My father was the greatest man I think I'll ever, ever, ever meet. And so I want to write a book and dedicate it to my father, because I'm the only one that can tell the story, because nobody knows it as well as I do. And I had him for 86 years.
All right.
And it is a day that goes by that I don't have something positively good to say about George Patton Sr. Thank you.
George, thank you very much. Heartfelt. Don in Detroit, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Hello, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You've been
ahead. 3 years, sir.
3 years out of work?
And actually, I had a real good job making $85,000 a year, truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
Walked in one day, and they said, hey, we're closing down. But what most people don't realize, when you get laid off, downsize immediately. Not that next year. I went from three cars. Ford came and repossessed them all, and you know, because you're not getting health insurance anymore. So you have to. So you go to dentist. You have to pay for your own dentist, or you get sick. You have to pay for your own, you know, your own doctor visits out of that I live in Michigan, but I worked in Ohio, so they pay $100 more, which was great.
Have you changed the kinds of jobs that you would accept?
No one would hire a Teamster. You know, you fill out applications, and they won't hire Teamsters. They'll say, we demand too much, or we don't want to do anything. I went to fill out an application one time. My buddy told me they was hiring truck drivers at 11 o'clock at night. I said, okay. He says, they just put it on the board. Be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. I showed up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the guy said the job was filled already.
So even though these might be non-union positions and your Teamsters membership doesn't apply, they look at that background and say, too demanding.
Yeah. We're too demanding, or we make too much, or we don't want to do anything. And I'm actually I'm driving a truck now. I'm doing pretty good. Like I said, the process is downsizing. I had three Cardinals. I had to get rid of them. I couldn't afford to keep the three Cardinals. Everything is, you know, getting back into where it's supposed to be, and it makes you appreciate the unemployment. I wish they would have gave me half of your one lump sum.
Uh-huh.
You know, once a truck driver, always a truck driver. We would rather buy our own truck and be an independent truck driver.
Oh, that's interesting. And instead of the week by week, because then you got to, well, if you're going to get the one lump sum for the down payment, then you got to save it up and not spend it on your necessities.
There you go. And I have a Volvo. I have a 207 Volvo.
Hey, Don, I realize you come from Detroit, but why do you need three cars?
Beg your pardon?
I realize you come from the Motor City, but did you say you have three? You had three cars?
Well, I had a car. My wife had a car. My daughter had a car.
Oh, there you go. You have three people.
Yeah, they was off. You know, my daughter was in college. She needed a car. So we had to take all of those back and go down, you know, to cars with no notes but look great, you know, and it makes a big difference. When I see people not holding on to stuff that they're going to lose anyway, then you have to step back and say, hey, you know, it's either food, kids, or, you know, whatever.
I hear it. Don, I'm going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate your call. Happy New Year and good luck to you. Let's get one more in here from the employer's perspective. Here's Heidi on the East Side. Heidi, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you. I, as an employer, have had employees quit their jobs and actually get unemployment. I get a form in the mail that says, has this person worked for you? And I say yes, and I say the hours, and I say that they've actually left on their own. I've not fired them. I've not laid them off, and yet they collect unemployment. And
I thought you have to be laid off to collect unemployment.
It's not true. If a worker decides to leave, all they have to do is file.
Yeah.
I've seen it time and time again. I've talked to the unemployment counselors on the phone because I find it outrageous.
And then do you get hit up for part of that payment?
My unemployment rate goes up. So I end up paying more unemployment taxes.
Mm-hmm. So when you hear about this unemployment extension, again, it's up to 99 weeks, but for more people, then do you think this is going to create more laziness? Or you've heard these other calls that have come in where people say they're, you know, they would gladly work and they're looking for something and it's degrading to them to be on unemployment insurance.
You know, as liberal and progressive as they get, and I feel like there are people who really would work if they had work, but I happen to see a large amount of people who, the only way for me to fight against an employee who just leaves on their own is to offer them their jobs back. It's problematic because I usually hire someone to replace them,
mm-hmm.
but in the cases where I have offered to give them their jobs back, they don't take them. And I think a lot of them work in jobs off the books and collect unemployment at the same time. I know that there are a lot of really good, hardworking people who are really pounding the pavement and looking for work, but time and time again, mm-hmm. I see people gaming the system.
Heidi, thank you. I appreciate your call. Dan Ariely, you'll get the last word here. Dan, yes?
So Heidi's concern, I think, are of course, part of the story. And you know, they've always been a part of the story, and I think they've always been a small part of the story. One of the things that I think worries people correctly is that with the amount of bailouts and with the amount of things that are going on in terms of spending taxpayers' money, there's all of a sudden less and less bashfulness about being bailed out, right? If so many other big companies can bail out and keep on paying tremendous amounts of money to their executives, why can't I get a small bailout?
Right. People see Citibank and AIG getting bailed out, and they say, "Where's mine?"
That's right. I've paid taxes all the time. Most of my taxes have gone to bail out these guys. It's my social turn. And I think this is kind of a worrisome mindset that we see it in bankruptcies, that people are less and less worried about declaring bankruptcy. The negative weight of the title seem to be less influential. And I think the same thing could happen. And I think, sadly, it could get worse and worse unless we try to reinstate what we think are kind of civil duties and what we do with our taxes and what is appropriate and inappropriate usage of taxpayers' money.
So in our last 30 seconds, as a behavioral economist, do you think it's good, bad, or neutral that it's more acceptable than it was to be on relief?
I don't think it's good that it's more acceptable, but I do think we need to understand that we've created a huge rift in the economy, and we have to help people kind of survive that and figure it out. I think we need to help people in the meantime. We need to give them opportunities for retraining. We need to give them opportunities for volunteering to find a space in society. We might need to move people from place to place. There's a lot of unevenness in the employment and unemployment around the U.S. But we have to kind of take bigger steps into trying to relieve this problem.
It's also one of the impediments to finding work for people who would otherwise have moved, as people have done in the history of America, because it's so hard to sell your house. It's harder to take employment elsewhere than it used to be. Dan Ariely, yep. Behavioral economist at Duke University, author of The Upside of Irrationality. We really appreciate it. Thank
My
you
pleasure.
Very much. And thanks to all of you who called in, employees, unemployees, and employers. And when we come back after a one-minute break, we will give you the latest on NJN, that is New Jersey's public radio and television network, with the state preparing to end its funding. And then back to the tax and unemployment compromise from the tax side. We will have a tax advisor here in a few minutes to give you free advice on how to take advantage of the new tax law. Stay tuned.